As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. The game is the meal. We're the after-dinner drinks. Pour yourself a cold one. Leafs Nation postgame on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Leaf defenseman carries to center. Works to the blue line and in. Still with it, going wide. Took a shot. He scores! Jake Gardner goes end to end. And the Maple Leafs are within a goal.
That's how close the Toronto Maple Leafs got. Joe Bowen with the call. Jake Gardner cuts the margin down to 4-3 for the Calgary Flames. That was the final tonight. Calgary 4, Toronto 3. We welcome you back to Leafs Nation postgame. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stelic, Todd Alushko on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Well, let's get right at it. He asked the first question in the Lou Lamoriello conference call. Our good friend Chris Johnson from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, joining us. And I know, Chris, you were in person the Buffalo, Florida game, so we'll talk a little bit about that later on. I got to first tell you, weird. And unfortunately, it's going to be like this, I think, for a big chunk of the season. I don't know. I mean, this is a game that really is so irrelevant now for the Maple Leafs. And you have to get back beyond the personnel moves and the prospective ones to play and get an identity and work hard like they were, you know, other games on the ice. They got to somehow get that back as well.
Yeah, and it's going to be a challenge, I would think, particularly on this road trip where, you know, look, the Leafs don't have very much of a team right now. I mean, they've got a few of their forwards injured, and you know, by trading Dion Phaneuf, you know, Lou Lamoriello was quite open about the fact that, I think it's evident to us guys that, you know, they're getting better, or sorry, worse in the short term, no question, and having to patch some holes. So I think the challenge is going to be, you know, just not having too much of a dip, I guess, in morale and belief, because you know, they're going to be the least talented team on the ice most nights now.
Chris, Tobias Lindbergh and a second round draft pick is essentially what the Leafs are getting for is what they're getting for Dion Phaneuf. Obviously, the salary that's going to be picked up by Ottawa, is that enough? What they got for Dion Phaneuf with those two guys? That's essentially what it is.
I think it's a pretty impressive haul, to be honest. You know, I spent a lot of the afternoon on the phone, Todd, and you know, it seemed to me the consensus from some other NHL teams is that, you know, they saw it as a victory from the Leafs' perspective to get someone to take five more years beyond this one of Dion Phaneuf's contract, and also for them to get some resources, you know, to get some assets back in return. And you know, Lindbergh is seen as a prospect that's going to play in the NHL by a lot of scouts, and you know, obviously, second round pick has some value, depending on, you know, how early it ends up that round based on where Ottawa finishes in 2017. But you know, I do think it accomplishes a lot of what the Leafs want to do, because that cap space is going to be very important as they look to rebuild the organization, as they sign players like Morgan Rielly to you know, deals beyond his entry level deal this summer, where he's going to get a raise. And you know, even though these guys aren't in the NHL yet, they're going to need space eventually if Nylander and Marner and these players become, you know, the type of players the Leafs believe they can be. And, you know, as time went on, Dion Phaneuf's contract was going to be much, much harder to trade just because he was getting older. And then, you know, I think we can rightly assume his performance will dip as that happens, as it does for all players. So, you know, I think given all the circumstances surrounding this, that was a big enough return, you know, for what the Leafs are trying to do right now. And they're very clearly in the midst of a pretty big rebuild.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's funny nowadays, every team's tight now. You don't really get too many scoops about where someone is going. I was caught a little bit, but surprised that it was Ottawa. And like I said, you asked the first question of Lou Lamoriello, and you're digging that. What's your understanding how something got started and then just grew?
Well, in this case, I don't think it's much deeper than as soon as Brian Murray mentioned Dion Phaneuf as someone he was interested in, the Leafs acted pretty quickly. And, you know, I think that, again, the opportunity to trade him without, you know, retaining any salary is pretty significant, given that, you know, that basically teams don't acquire players with 5 years left on their deals too often. I mean, it happens once or twice a year, but it's tough to trade these guys. A lot of GMs are reluctant to take on that kind of commitment, even for good players. And, you know, I think Dion Phaneuf, one thing that might be getting a little bit overlooked, has played quite well this year in more sheltered minutes, you know, basically second pair guy on Mike Babcock's team. And, you know, he does help the Ottawa Senators. I think the Sens have a better chance to make the playoffs now than they did this morning before that trade was completed. But, you know, for Toronto, I just think it was a very unique opportunity. And what was telling, really, was that Lou Lamoriello said, we had no choice but to make the trade. And, you know, I think, again, that I almost can't emphasize enough that, you know, it's rare that you're going to get a team that was willing to take all of that contract. And as soon as that happened, I believe on Saturday, when that was kind of first broached, that it led to this getting done fairly quickly.
Chris, there's a relationship with Jared Cowan and Mike Babcock from past, from the juniors. Is this a reclamation project? Like, is this something that they think they can get Jared Cowan back on track again? And if so, could he? I mean, he's only 25 years old. Could he be a significant part of the Leafs rebuilding program if he can get back on track?
He's probably, I would say, the biggest unknown in this deal because, you know, there's nothing to suggest he can't get back on track. And, you know, even Brian Murray has said repeatedly in the lead up to this deal and even today when he spoke with reporters that he thinks that Jared Cowan's going to be a regular player in the league at some point. And, you know, I think for the Leafs, there's lots of options with Jared because, you know, there's an option to buy him out the remaining year of his summer, this summer if they wish, in which they would actually get a cap savings next year and then have a small cap hit the following year. So there's not a lot of risk other than, again, you're spending money. But for the Leafs organization, one advantage they do enjoy is that they are willing to do that when it helps make them better. And, you know, I do think for Cowan, he's going to get an opportunity now. I mean, the Leafs blue line's pretty thin, and I still think that there's a good chance Roman Polak will be moved here before February 29th. So it's going to be weakened even further. And I guess they'll kind of take it slowly from there. But he's the one that is probably the most intriguing. I mean, Milan Mihalik, if he's healthy, he's had a lot of health issues, is expected to play for the Leafs next year. I think Colin Greening is more likely to remain in the American Hockey League where he's been playing for the Senators. But Jared Cowan is still a young player that can become an asset for the Leafs if, you know, Mike Babcock maybe get through to him a little bit, and if the change of scenery might help as well.
Chris Johnson joining Gord Stellick and Todd Olushko, Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You deal with everybody, and the players included. And, you know, I just did an article. It's going to be up on sportsnet.ca tomorrow, just talking about the different captains. And I compared Dion to kind of Rick Vive, you know, a guy who wore it with pride, did all the right things, wasn't a real good team around him, and certainly showed last year, like, I'm sorry, salute gate, just the void in any kind of leadership. And unfortunately, he kind of got clustered with that poor leadership group around him.
I agree. You know, I was so close to it during the time he was with the Leafs, and so maybe I don't see it the way that the fans would, but, you know, I had a lot of time for Dion, and I think that, you know, he really did want to be a good player. I think that he was honest with his intentions and his efforts, and, you know, unfortunately, he's going to really be, you know, one of the players that is remembered as part of this team that, you know, the Leafs, let's face it, they collapsed a lot in his tenure here. And, you know, I don't think it's as simple as saying he was the captain, so he is responsible. But, you know, he's going to wear some of that with his legacy. But, you know, I do think the guy, you know, gave an honest effort and did what he could to be successful. But, you know, he wasn't surrounded by clearly the best teams and the best, you know, teammates to be able to make that happen. So, you know, I have to think getting rid of that C, getting out of Toronto, you know, playing on a team where Erik Karlsson is clearly the leader on the blue line, that, you know, this could be, you know, weight off Dion's shoulders. And I don't think he'll be asked to do very much for Dave Cameron and the Senators. And, you know, we might see this guy thrive here in the next little bit just with his own change of scenery, which, you know, I do think can benefit players in sports.
And I just got to say, I mean, my interactions with him have been very positive. I'm, you know, like when you met him away from things, he kind of can't help that it doesn't flow easy for him, like say a Doug Gilmore did or somebody like that. But I think, Chris, he'd be the number two defenseman there. I think having a 30-minute guy like Carlson, I think having a number one that he's never played with, I mean, he was supposed to be that number one, it really changes a lot. It gives you very different opportunities for Phaneuf or somebody else to maybe, even like Luke Shen's getting in Los Angeles with a guy like Doughty around. I mean, to thrive a little bit more than you did in a situation which was much more difficult.
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot of things I think we all can overlook sometimes and the emotion of everything. I mean, you know, how you're used by a coach is important. Even your relationship with that coach. I mean, some guys just feel that they don't have the belief from those that are, you know, in charge of dictating their minutes and their usage. And, you know, I do think that could be an issue for Jared Cowan because, you know, there were times as a Senator when he showed a lot of promise beyond just the fact he was a first-round pick that there was some results there. But certainly here, since Dave Cameron took over, and I'm not blaming Dave outright, but I'm just saying that you know, it was pretty clear Jared Cowan's time with the Senators was limited at that point. And, you know, when he comes to Toronto and you have Mike Babcock maybe pat him on the shoulder and they have a bit of a previous relationship and some, you know, direct ties in common and can say, look, I know you're a better player than what you've shown and we're going to get you back there. And, you know, even that simple gesture, you know, I think carries some weight. And then it's sort of the similar on the flip side. I do think Dion, though, I don't have a lot of complaint. I mean, I know he made an error in that game against the Senators, a pretty glaring error on the weekend. And, you know, there certainly were, it wasn't a perfect season, but I think he was having a much better year than he did last year in more manageable minutes. And, you know, I think that will continue in Ottawa, where he's now getting thrown into a playoff chase, which should energize him as well.
Chris, who do you see in that dressing room right now that now Dion is gone? Who do you think is going to be that voice in there that's going to take the leadership role? I know they'll do it as committee, but in your opinion, is there one or two guys in there right now that'll stand up and say, hey, boys, let's get her going?
Well, we're not very far removed from this being totally turned over to the kids, Todd. I mean, Nazem Kadri is the number one center. I think Morgan Riley has taken on a lot of the media responsibility actually already this year before this trade. And depending on how many veterans are still shipped out before the trade deadline, I mean, this is going to be a very young team. And, you know, I think that this is part of what's, you know, what management's trying to do is to get some of those guys to be, you know, take a little bit more direct ownership of the dressing room and what happens in there and what goes on, you know, with the team. I mean, they've really parted ways with a good chunk of the core now in a calendar year, getting rid of David Clarkson, Phil Kessel, Dion Phaneuf. I mean, I think Joffrey Lupul's future remains a little bit murky. You know, he's on injured reserve right now. But, you know, I don't know if you guys saw, I wrote a story on Sportsnet.ca in which I spoke with Joffrey, and he was pretty, I would say, open about the fact that, you know, he might not have a long period left in Toronto, depending on, you know, what happens there. So, you know, a lot of the veterans that have been around are elsewhere. Some of the other guys are on one-year deals that are veteran players, but you know, I look at sort of the Rileys and Kadri to a slightly lesser extent as, you know, some of the ones that have to pick it up. But let's face it, I mean, this is a team really starting from scratch. And you know, I think it's going to be tough on those guys because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the Leafs are going to be overmatched in most of these games now until the end of this season at least.
Well, going to let you go. Just want to talk about two teams that the Leafs are emulating, Florida, Buffalo. You saw that game tonight and a Florida team a few years ahead of both Buffalo and the Maple Leafs. And, you know, Buffalo probably a more realistic team to emulate for the Leafs. What did you see tonight?
Well, there's some frustration in Buffalo, you know, that I'm sensing just because, you know, they got off to a decent start and it slipped away from them here. And, you know, that this is the flip side and the bad side of a rebuild can be that it doesn't start going in a positive direction soon enough. I mean, we're still in teardown mode a little bit with the Leafs, but you know, I think the Sabres were hoping for better things with Evander Kane and Ryan O'Reilly and Jack Eichel and you know, the players they brought in, Robin Leonard and Nett, and, you know, it's not going so well. Whereas Florida, you know, what I see that they have is at least the makings of a team that can be a real contender because Aaron Ekblad is, without question in my mind, a number one defenseman long term. I mean, he's already basically there for the Panthers in his second NHL season, but I think over time, there'll be no question about that. And I think Alexander Barkov, who missed tonight's game after taking a hit last night in Detroit, is the real deal, is kind of a centerman who is not going to be challenging for the scoring lead, I don't believe, but he'll be, you know, the kind of guy you need to win with. And, you know, sort of more of the Taves Kopitar model you know, big and defensively reliable, and also chips in a number of points. So when you have the number one center and the number one D, and they're young, you know, that when that box is clicked, I think you have a real opportunity to do something. And, you know, Florida looks like they're going to make the playoffs this year, but I think they're, more importantly, you know, positioning themselves to really challenge the next number of years to maybe even become a Stanley Cup contender.
Chris, it says Evander Kane was playing tonight, but could have been mistaken for Evander Holyfield. Kane had three fights tonight. What was up with that?
Or maybe Forbes Kennedy.
Him and Alex Petrovic, and I have to say, it's funny, we came in, I went in the Panthers dressing room after the game, and Petrovic was wearing their Spacey and Space sweatshirt, their, you know, their version of, you know, the player handed out player of the game, but Luongo was chirping him and saying that, you know, that he had only won, you know, he was basically only got half a draw in one of the fights and lost the other two. So
we have Chris there.
Lost him.
I just kind of lost him there. Anyway, that's a good note. We'll say goodbye. We'll grab him later. Give him our regards there. So, him still? No. Okay, we'll give Chris our regards. Chris Johnson joining us from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. So just fill that in about that, because we'll get the out-of-town scores later on. I don't know when the last time there's been three
fights by one guy. I mean, Evander Kane and Petrovic, I believe they fought three separate times. So, yeah, you're not going to see that too often. Obviously, one of the guys... I'd imagine Evander Kane was probably more the instigator, knowing that he likes to scrap a little bit. But yeah, from the sounds of it, it looks like he took 2.5 rounds out of Petrovic. So yeah, well, at least he showed up, right?
Yeah, in 2002, maybe we'll get Jody Shelley on sometime to talk about it. It was him and the late Bob Probert back in 2002 had three fights in one game. Before that, it was Todd Halushko and somebody really small he picked on. All the small guys on another team, three fights.
And a couple with Tucker.
In one game. Way back when. Let's see here. Anyway, thanks so much, Chris Johnson. Like you said, interesting perspectives. Done a lot of scooping around about, just when you start thinking about, you start with Roman Polak, he's going to be a valued guy for some team. Everybody always wants defense. If you're going to go deep, remember last year, like Anaheim just loaded up with even Corbinny and Holzer. They just added guys that never played,
yep.
Right? Just because if you run into, James Wisniewski was another one. They had one other one too. Sakach, I'm just trying to remember what it was. No, shouldn't guess. Anyway, I'll get them all. Yeah. I'll get them all there. Got a few D last year adding on, so Roman Polak will have some value that way. Mike Babcock, head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. It was a busy day for everyone in Leafland. Here he is, Mike Babcock.
Enough opportunities to win this hockey game here tonight?
Well, for sure. I mean, you know, we took a too many men on the ice penalty, scored on that one, lost faceoff, didn't block the shot. Another lost faceoff, didn't block the shot, gave up a shorthanded goal. You shouldn't have. I thought we gave him two gifts, but I thought we did lots of good things. In the end, we worked hard and had the puck a lot, but didn't score enough to win.
Pleased with how the team responded emotionally with the injuries that obviously came off the last game and then enough trade this week?
Yeah, no, I didn't expect anything different, though. I mean, we normally play real hard and are pretty organized. I thought we played hard again tonight. I like to see us come out in the upper side of this, obviously, and we didn't.
You asked for others to step up. Did you see that, Holland, Corrado, Lebo?
Well, that's why I thought Frankie was really good. And I thought Gardner was as good as he's been in a long time, which is nice to have him back. You know, it was nice to see Lebo score a goal. And just in general, I thought we had lots of players. I thought our forwards were good.
I feel like Kadri maybe got a bit rattled after that Giordano hit at the end of the first. And maybe if you see anything to settle down at the intermission.
Well, I mean, you know, obviously at the time you didn't think it was a fair hit. I think, you know, from what I saw, it was a hit, a hockey hit, and he was fired up, and that's part of the game. You just got to control yourself.
Thank you.
See you guys.
See you guys. Mike Babcock, head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Again, the hit, Nazem Kadri, he took from Giordano, and then they were showing it on sports. Darren Millar is going to join us in a few minutes' time, and they were the ones just talking about the doing the cutthroat gesture. So
yeah,
see if the league talks to him or...
No, listen to Nick Kipperos when he was talking about it. He said, you know, the unfortunate thing is just too many cameras now. Like, you can't do that or else someone's going to see it. And then they caught it again tonight.
Well, and also there's just like way less tolerance than that years ago. Darren Millard, just wrapping things up with Sportsnet. Why don't we wrap things up for the time being? Come back. We've got the out-of-town scores still to come. A lot of very intriguing out-of-town stories that we'll get to as well. There were 12 games at all around the National Hockey League. It was a 4-3 win for the Calgary Flames over the Toronto Maple Leafs on Dion Phaneuf's last day as a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord's Delic, Todd Alushko, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Sportsnet 590. 590, The Fan.
In sports, the Leafs
it's
looking
your
for a
postgame workout. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The way I found out was on my phone, I think, like most people. And it was pretty emotional for a lot of guys. I mean, one of our really good friends and obviously our leader on our team. So it started that way, and obviously it was tough all day long, and just tried to refocus for the game. And I thought we competed well, but just didn't start the way we wanted to.
Hi, Jake Gardner in a lot of ways competed well tonight, got the big goal at the end. Well, it wasn't a big goal. It made it a little more compelling. 4-3, Calgary Flames won over the Toronto Maple Leafs. They ultimately fell short, but of course he's talking about learning of the trade of Leaf captain Dion Phaneuf. Welcoming you back to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord's Delic, Todd Alushko on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And just, did you have a trade that hit you the most about a teammate? Like, would it be stature on the team, or would it be just someone you're great buddies with?
I think it's more your buddies. Enough. Like, it's tough. Everyone understands the business of hockey, that when a trade does happen, they know that's, you know, it's going to be the benefit, going to be for the benefit of your team, and you hope the best for that guy. But it's more that when you really gain a friendship with a guy. And I think for Jake Gardner, I mean, Dion Phaneuf was a really good buddy. I mean, they hung out off ice and stuff. And that's the part where it hurts more. Everyone understands you're going to go on, you're going to move on, and you're going to play with other teams from time to time. But it's just the friendships that you build that hurt more than anything. But, you know, time heals that, and they'll get together in the summertime.
Yeah, and of course, he's been tight with Morgan Riley, kid about. They were like living together, kind of a reality show initially. So certainly Morgan Riley's the guy. I mean, he is the guy. And that is good news. I mean, him being the guy, Jake Gardner. I was just looking at the 2008 NHL draft a little while ago, and Leafs picked Luke Shen. Will they pick him fifth? Yep, picked him fifth overall, moved up. Ottawa selects Erik Karlsson 15th.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you can go through drafts always and, you know, beat everyone up about, but anyway, great pick. More give the Ottawa Senators credit for that pick. Next two, because I know you can't feign surprise because I already said them to you. Boston selects Joe Colburn, mm-hmm. and then Anaheim selects Jake Gardner, 16th and 17th overall to give us some context, some perspective. Of course, Alec Todd Alushko, we're going to try to connect with Darren Millard in a few minutes' time. Of course, he was covering the game for Sportsnet tonight. Take a look at the out-of-town scoreboard. Todd, we'll do our famous back-and-forth, which the studio audience has grown to really love and enjoy, appreciate, and expect. And why don't you start with the beloved Montreal Canadiens, and good news for those Canadian fans that have been lying in the fetal position for couple of weeks.
No, exactly. After, you know, a little bit of a bump in the road there, the Tampa Bay Lightning came into town to Montreal, and Montreal handed them a 4-2 defeat tonight. So the Canadiens extended their winning streak to 3 games. Brendan Gallagher had a goal and an assist. And, you know, the savior, Ben Scrivens, made 37 saves to win his third straight start for Montreal. And PK Subban extended his point streak to an NHL high 7 games with an assist. So he's been catching a lot of slack for not producing goals, but he's producing a lot of assists and creating goals for the Habs as of late.
Yeah, Tampa Bay Lightning were a team that had Montreal Canadiens' number big time last year, big time. So that's a nice win that way. Thomas Plekanec also had a goal and 2 assists in the victory. Milan Lucic, you know, this is the way you want to come back. This is the way. And actually, he had kind things to say about his time in Boston. Really has handled that well, appreciated well, but it's really found his niche in Los Angeles. So it comes back to Boston. The Kings give it to him. Paston, a 9-2 pasting over the Boston Bruins. Milan Lucic had a goal assist. He was giving a standing ovation after a video tribute was shown on the scoreboard during the second time out of the first period. I mean, he's a consummate Boston player, right?
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, the 9 players all scored for L.A. Jeff Carter, Marian Gaborik, Andy Andrioff, Drew Doughty, Dwight King, Trevor Lewis, Luke Shen, Dustin Brown. How about that? 9 different guys score in a 9-2 win over Boston.
That's called having a little bit of depth in your lineup right there. So, And in Buffalo, a little bit of a rough outing tonight for the Buffalo Sabres and some tension between the two opposing teams. Riley Smith and UC Jokinen each had 3 points to lead the Panthers to a 7-4 victory over the Sabres. Smith, 2 goals and assists. Jokinen had a goal and 2 assists. Jaromír Jágr scored his 739th goal. And he's just 2 goals behind Brett Hull right now for third time on the all-time list. That record will fall shortly. Alex Petrovic had a Gordie Howe hat trick with a goal and assist. And get this, 3 fights, like we mentioned earlier, with Sabres forward Evander Kane. And this is the first time, Gord, like you mentioned, since January 10th, 2002, Jody Shelley and Bob Probert had that. Those two guys fought each other 3 times in 1 game.
Just give the scores quickly and then get Darren on. We'll give more comprehensive reports. But Anaheim 4-1 over Philadelphia. New York Islanders 3-2 shootout victory over Columbus. Winnipeg a 2-1 shootout victory over St. Louis. Washington beat Nashville 5-3. Dallas beat Minnesota 4-3 in a shootout. New Jersey 2-1 winners over Edmonton. San Jose 2-0 shutout over Chicago. And Vancouver 3-1 victors over Colorado. And Darren Millard, of course, covering it with the gang at Sportsnet tonight's game. He joins Gord Stellick, Todd Orlushko. Hey, Darren.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Now, how do you decide who the third person is with you? Like, it's always you and Kip. Then sometimes it's Mike Johnson. Sometimes it's Doug McLean. Sometimes it's Elliot Freeman. And tonight, Damian Cox, did like 3 people phone in sick, or how did it work?
No, well, Doug never does Leaf games.
Oh, okay. I think he's mentioned that to me. Okay.
And tonight, Elliot is in Detroit.
Yeah.
Getting set for Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. And Mike Johnson was working the game.
So tell us about Damian's, because we were doing the intermission, and tell us about Damian's dream sequence with you. Like, there was a board there, and there was a picture of Mike Babcock, and it just was warm and fuzzy, and everything was right.
You know, there's
I'm not being a total smart aleck.
There's so much intensity around what's going to happen with the Toronto Maple Leafs and the teardown and what's going to happen in the future and how long is it going to take and are they going to be able to make the right decision? So Damien just put together a scenario where everything goes right. They get the players that are free agents or from the KHL or are winning the Austin Matthews draft lottery. And then eventually he capped it off with Steven Stamkos signed. So he just put a fun little segment together. I mean, it broke Twitter and some people from various outlets thought it was too positive. It was something different that you just look at it as, and if everything ever went perfect, what would the Leafs core look like next year? And it was that's all it was. It was more tongue in cheek than it was. You know what? This is really what the Leafs, if they caught a couple of breaks, could look like next year.
And you know, Todd, that's something every organization does have in the summer. You do look at your dream setup that way.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah,
on a whiteboard and write it up. Darren, you know, quick question. I mean, Lou and Mike Babcock, they've done a great job of, you know, pumping up guys' tires this year, you know, telling them how great Dion has been this year. And I'm obviously talking about Kadri as well. I mean, is this a little bit of foreshadowing for some of the guys that are getting their tires pumped by these guys that, you know what, anything's happened and anyone can go at any time?
I'll tell you this. When Elliot did his interview with Lou Lamoriello at the 41-game mark on January 16th, and he spoke so glowingly about Dion and Nazem Kadri. There were some mentions in our group that he was shining them up. And Nick had, I thought he phrased it perfectly tonight, said, what Lou did was when you want to sell your home, you stage it. You make it look as great as possible. And that's basically exactly what he did with Dion Phaneuf and Nazem Kadri. So, would I be surprised if Nazem Kadri was also moved out? No, given his contract status and the negotiations that are going to come up at the end of this season if he's not moved. But that's exactly what they did. They made a decision that he wasn't going to be a contributor when this team was ready to be competitive, and he would take up too much money when they had to make decisions on up and coming players on bridge contracts. So they moved him out, and I think that's all it was they took a very proactive approach to make sure that everything surrounding Dion Phaneuf out to the National Hockey League from the Toronto Maple Leafs organization was positive, from the coach to the general manager.
And just so you know, Todd, all the homes that are staged in the Toronto area put pictures up of the Millard family. You know, they're trying to get that, they borrow that for that very happy kind of view that way.
Of course.
Dion Phaneuf.
You're not wrong in that.
Yeah, are you kidding? It's not because of you. It's because of Jen and the kids. But anyway, I was just saying, Dion Phaneuf is a guy, I equate him. I know you wouldn't have been around when Rick Five was captain, but I said, guys that were really proud and really tried hard. They may have not been the best natural leaders. Teams weren't having success on the ice. Wasn't a strong leadership core around them. But at the end of the day, I had a lot of time for both of them. And I really, I don't know many of these players very well at all. But Dion Phaneuf, for whatever reason, was some guy I just seemed to catch up with from time to time at various things. And I really found him first class. I know people that I was with were actually surprised because he does appear to be, I say, monotone, robotic. Just he really tried to walk the walk to his best of his abilities.
Well, let's be straight. I mean, you and I don't even know each other that well, and I still come on the show with you.
That's true, but you like Todd.
Yeah, exactly.
And Matt Brown.
Todd and I are tight. And Brownie was awesome. Shout out to Matt Brown today, who did an incredible job in a fluid situation on that the breaking news today. So I really appreciate his work today. I would agree with you, Dion. In every interaction I've had, from when I'm on when we're just off in the summer on Prince Edward Island, and or around the rink or in the dressing room, whether when he was in Calgary, when he's been in Toronto, he's always been very professional. I'm not down there as much as I would like to, because of the radio show. But he's always been really good. I'll go a step further that I think he put a lot of work into trying to rehabilitate his reputation as a teammate this year. Not as much as a player, not as much as a leader, but more as a teammate. And I think that he got a lot of mileage out of this. A year ago, I know Detroit was close in the trade for Dion Phaneuf last year, the deadline. And they wanted Toronto to retain some of the salary, and that's why it fell through. And this one doesn't include that type of scenario. But I wouldn't have been comfortable bringing him into my room last year because of everything that I had heard. And my viewpoint has changed in watching him take a lesser role this year and being able to fit into a situation under Mike Babcock where he was a much better teammate. And I think he's made major strides. And going into Ottawa under Dave Cameron, who he knows, both Islanders, I think is really a great situation for him, where they both know where the other one is coming from.
Darren, how much of this deal was, you know, two old buddies that have done deals in the past with Lou and Brian Murray? I mean, they obviously know each other. They're old school general managers. A little bit later on in their life, that they just got together and they said, listen, what can we do to create something? Like you want to get rid of these guys. We like to unload this. And these are just two guys that got on the phone and they said, okay, let's figure something out that works best for both of us, whether it's short-term or long-term. I mean, the relationship that they must have had must have went a little ways in actually being able to finalize this deal.
I think it's like anybody. When you've been in the same circle for a long time, then there's no garbage between you. Nobody, everybody's tricks. You know what deals they pull off in the past. You know their modus operandi. So I think this was purely just two guys who know the business very well and are able to get deals done. And I give Brian Murray credit for going after this thing and not being afraid of the backlash of bringing the Toronto Maple Leafs captain into his room, which I'm sure plays a role in a lot of different scenarios where teams would be afraid to bring in their arch rival's most recognizable player, their leader in Dion Phaneuf. So I think it's a real credit to the two oldest general managers in the National Hockey League, just nailing down a hockey trade.
Yeah, you know, and I'm thinking, one thing I did tweet out earlier, I don't do a lot of tweeting, but it'll be, I think there's another challenge for Dion Phaneuf.
I thought I saw a carrier pigeon fly over top of the building.
That was it. Yeah, there. You know, I'm like E.F. Hutton. When I do tweet, people listen. And but I just saying, he has a chance to be Larry Murphy in 1997, what he did
Absolutely.
With Detroit. Or, I mean, Thomas Cabrelet was a big bust, even though Boston won the Cup, right? So he can be one of the two. And I'm interested to see, because I think he's a talented guy. Erik Karlsson will eat the 30 minutes. He's never had that kind of guy around him, because he was very quickly supposed to be the guy that plays the 25, 26 minutes. And there's an opportunity to bring it to a different level without the C and all those kind of things. And I think he very well can do it. Luke Shen has upped his game in Los Angeles. Like, you know, it's funny when you get in certain environments and that, we'll see what happens.
I'm just curious to see what Dion Phaneuf, the hockey player, can do. Not Dion Phaneuf, the captain, not Dion Phaneuf, the leader, not Dion Phaneuf that takes and has so much pressure on him. And I know for a fact he's told guys that that there's so much pressure on him in Toronto for this team and himself to succeed and his reputation. And that has to wear on him. I think it's going to be really intriguing to watch Dion Phaneuf, the hockey player, and how he develops under that scenario. And that's an Ottawa room that has a lot of fun. I know that they went through a really rough time over the last week, but you watch Erik Karlsson and Mark Stone and Mike Hoffman. Kyle Turris is a low-key guy, but enjoys the success that he's had. Craig Anderson is an emotional, fun-loving guy. I'm really curious to see how Dion Phaneuf excels as a guy that just goes out and plays and doesn't have to be the captain that stands out and answers all the questions on a night-to-night basis, or be the focal point of the leadership group.
Darren, just one last question from me. The pressure that there must be on DJ Smith right now. I mean, one of the big pieces in this rebuilding format that Toronto's going through was Tobias Lindbergh. So DJ Smith coached him in Oshawa. I mean, he must have had a lot to say when it came to, basically saying, listen, let's get this guy part of the deal.
I think there's pressure on DJ. I think there's pressure on Mike Babcock, because I would be willing to bet that Mike Babcock had a conversation with Tim Speltz, the general manager of the Spokane Chiefs, where Callan came from, and where Mike Babcock formerly was a coach. And they would have talked about where Callan was when he came out of junior, when he was drafted, and where he is now. So I would think that they both feel a little bit of pressure for doing their research or offering their opinions and putting their necks out on the case of prospects. And that's what Jared Callan still is. He's a prospect. He's older than Lindbergh, but who's getting you that Babcock has a much stronger, stable position as a National Hockey League coach. But I think that they both played to their strengths, and Lou Lamoriello played to his organization's strengths in both those scenarios. So I think it's very similar on both fronts with Cowan and Lindbergh.
Well, another thing, Todd and myself and you and everybody here, we got a lot of games to broadcast. And Leaf fans want to still be Leaf fans. And this is where, again, I set things up about one of my tweets, that the season cannot end like it did the last two seasons. And I got, trashed by some people about you idiot and all that, which I can handle that. But just saying, we want to get Auston Matthews. We want a good pick. I agree with that. I'm just saying, last year, look at the Buffalo Sabres, their first 20 games. It was bloody dismal. And if you create a culture like that, that becomes counterproductive, hard to get out of. And they had a better last three quarters of the season. And I just mean, tonight's game was okay. They just got it. They cannot have Ottawa Senator-type games like they had Saturday. They really cannot have a third consecutive, never mind off the ice, ugly, ugly finish to a season.
You know what? It might happen, though, Gord. I'm not going to sit here and say, look what they've done. They played hard, and it's going to be, if they can just continue to play this way and come up.
But why can't they play hard?
Because of lack of talent. I think you can. I don't care how hard you play. If you don't have anywhere close to the talent of the other team, you're going to get smoked. And I think by the time the NHL trade deadline's over, this team might be in a position where they're going to get smoked. And you're going to see the pain that Mike Babcock talked about, whether it's James Reimer's gone, and then who do you put in goal? Whether it's Tyler Bozak's gone or Leo Komarov is gone, and everybody's trying their best, but you still might get smoked in the last 22 games of this NHL season, and it's going to be something that they're going to have to deal with because they promised the pain, and I think Maple Leaf fans are really fortunate that they didn't see it. I haven't seen a lot of that, but it still might be coming.
Darren, you get have anything to talk about in trade deadline, or is everything going to fall like now?
The 3 weeks out from NHL trade deadline, you always get one of these types of deals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not surprised. I said it on Monday. I said this is going to be the week where we're going to get something that's going to break the seal, and then we're going to follow it up, and it's going to generate some activity leading up to the trade deadline. So yeah, I'm not surprised at all. Maybe with the two teams involved, but no, I think the NHL trade deadline a little more than two and a half weeks away still has plenty of possibilities with teams sorting out where they are in the standings.
Just wanted to give Hockey Central Noon a plug tomorrow. Brian Murray will be joining your August show. And hey, thanks. I know it's like triple duty tonight. Thanks for joining us. We always appreciate it. Quite a day.
And we'll also have Dion's debut tomorrow night at Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey.
Yes, absolutely. Doug McLean working that game?
Wearing number 2 because Mark Mathot wears number 3. Yes, Doug is working that
game. Okay, that's all I'm concerned about. Okay, he'll be wearing number 2, Mathot number 3. And you're number 1. Thanks, Darren.
Thanks, guys. Love you too.
Darren Millard. A little uncomfortable at the end there, but from Sportsnet, of course, all the coverage tonight. When we come back, we will continue with the out-of-town scoreboard. We gave a bevy of out-of-town scores, a little more in-depth about the games that went on tonight. We'll also hear from some of the principals involved in the game tonight. It was a 4-3 Calgary Flames win over the Toronto Maple Leafs, but of course, the big story dwarfing everything, Dion Phaneuf, Leaf captain, being traded to the Ottawa Senators. You're listening to Leaf Central, Leafs Nation, post-game. I call it Leaf Central because it's the trade stuff. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stelic, Todd Alushko, and Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Breaking down the game in a fanatic, obsessive, bordering on unhealthy manner. This is Leafs Nation postgame on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Shot scores off the point! Dougie Hamilton's wrist shot through a screen. And it is a 4-1 Calgary lead.
A little bit from Joe Bowen. Some of the action going on tonight. The Calgary Flames 4-3 winners over the Toronto Maple Leafs. Gord Stelic, Todd Alushko, welcoming you back to Leafs Nation postgame. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Going to go through the out-of-town scores again in a second, finish them up. Also, fill us in about the Calgary Flames' decision to make 3 players healthy scratches. I mean, in 2006, that's an old-time players thing about having parties, but and 3 of their better players.
Well, nowadays it's a little bit different. I remember we used to do it in the old days where you'd sneak in the back door and the trainer would let you in and he'd be your best buddy and you wouldn't get caught. But, apparently Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan came in, and Lance
Boma
came in a little bit late for a practice after Super Bowl. And those guys came in and, 15 minutes before practice, obviously, if you don't know, you before practice, you got to be there pretty much an hour and a half before you get prepared. So they know something's up. Obviously, they smelt something on them. They get disciplined by not playing tonight. But to me, that's hurting the entire Flames organization, the whole team. They're still battling for a playoff spot. And to sit those guys tonight, fortunately for them, it turned out all right. They ended up winning 4-3. I'm wondering if they would have been playing a team like the Los Angeles Kings tonight, if they would have sat those guys out. Maybe. It worked out for them, but I don't know. That's an old school way of sitting those guys out. I'd just hit them in the pocketbook. I think that hurts a little bit more. But lesson learned, young guys, And I guess they'll the old way of learning it. Listen, you're not going to play if you mess up like that. And you're pros. You don't want to miss out. If you're going to go out and party, have a good time, you've got to make sure that you pay the fiddler the next morning. Be there on time. That's the worst thing that can happen. And a coach, you know, he's not going to put up with that, especially out in Calgary when they're trying to battle for a playoff spot.
Well, that's the other point is, I mean, they're really battling for a playoff spot. So I wonder. You said if it was the LA Kings, would they have put them in?
Yeah.
I almost think it was a bigger chance sitting them out against the Leafs because Leafs were 2 points they felt they had in the bag. And by taking out the players that were allegedly in the bag.
Could have got crushed by the media had they lost in Calgary.
Yeah, so they dodge a bullet and they will see how their message goes. I mean, here we are a year later and we look at whatever exactly was the genesis of Nazem Kadri getting 3-game suspension. That seems like real distant history. Mm-hmm. I remember talking to a prominent player agent afterwards about that going, yeah, what the hell is going to happen now? Like, there's no way he could play another game or play next season or whatever in a Toronto Maple Leaf uniform. But it all came to pass and it was fine.
Yeah, no, that was crazy back then. And there was no information leaked out. Nothing really happened. Sat out, took his medicine and came back and played well. But yeah, it's everyone has their own way of dealing with things. And they like to keep it internal to let them know what happens. And I'm sure we're not going to find out exactly what was going on in Calgary and things like that. But listen, they deal with it. They're pros. They've got to be responsible as well. So
we'll pick up the out-of-town scoreboard where we left off. I'll jump in about Anaheim and Philadelphia. Yep. Do the whole thing over? Okay.
If you want.
Okay. You know, I'm going to start with that one and then go and do the things at the end. No, I'm going to be fine here. Matt Brown, he's a good producer, not a good director. Emil, can you take over, please? Handle the whole thing. Jeez. I'm going to pick up Anaheim 4-1 over Philadelphia. Bruce Boudreau joined us Saturday for Hockey Nation, and they didn't win against the Pittsburgh Penguins the day after he watched the Super Bowl with the special teams coach from the Pittsburgh Steelers. But they win 4-1 tonight. Rickard Rakell scored 2 goals. Always sounds like a Broadway show. Oh, yeah. Chris Stewart, local guy, scored on a penalty shot. Ryan Getzlaff had 2 assists. Andrew Cogliano also scores. The Ducks win for the 7th time in their past 8 games. Philadelphia needs those points, too. Those are tough losses for the Flyers.
Yep. You know, now they're talking about needing points, the New York Islanders, I mean, the surging Pittsburgh Penguins are crawling right up behind them. I think going into tonight's game, they were 1 point back of Pittsburgh. And they managed to get a win in Columbus tonight, a 3-2 shootout win. Ryan Strome and Anders Lee scored in regulation, while Franz Nielsen scored in the shootout for New York. Goalie Yaroslav Halak made 29 saves, and now the Islanders have won 4 games against the Blue Jackets this season. So they are beating up on the teams that they're supposed to beat up, and now they jumped 1 point ahead ahead of the Pittsburgh Penguins in the Metropolitan position to be in third place.
Yeah, 3-2 in a shootout. They beat the Columbus Blue Jackets. Also a shootout in St. Louis. Winnipeg Jets, again, talk about a team needing points, desperate to try to climb back in the playoff picture. The day after, Dustin Byfuglien signs the 5-year contract to remain a member of the Winnipeg Jets. Mark Scheifele scored in the 4th round of the shootout. Brian Little scored the lone goal in regulation time. Connor Hellebuck, who hadn't been slipping a bit of late, made 21 saves through overtime and 4-for-4 in the shootout for the win. 2-1 that the Winnipeg Jets win in a shootout against the St. Louis Blues.
And the number one team in the National Hockey League, the Washington Capitals, they just keep on rolling. They defeated the Nashville Predators 5-3 tonight in Nashville. Marcus Johansson returned to the lineup and had 1 goal and 2 assists for Washington. Johansson missed 4 games with an upper body injury, and the Caps have now won 4 consecutive games, improving to 27-1 after scoring the first goal. So, once they get the first one up on you, it's lights out.
And Braden Holtby, a guy now 34 wins in goal for the Capitals. He's looking to go after that record Marty Brodeur has as Marty Brodeur gets honored. We'll talk about that game in a second. First, another shootout. Dallas Stars 4-3 winners over the Minnesota Wild. Boy, the Wild are struggling. Mm-hmm. And Lou Lamoriello made it to New Jersey. How about that? Just looking at that. We'll talk about that in a sec. But John Klingberg scored with 2:21 remaining in overtime. Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin each had 2 assists for Dallas. Carey Lettinen made 36 saves. Minnesota is 1-8 in games decided in overtime. They've lost 6 consecutive games now and 11 of their past 12. Ouch. 4-3 Dallas beats them in a shootout.
And the Edmonton Oilers went to New Jersey tonight, and it was a special night there. Corey Schneider, New Jersey ended up winning 2-1. Corey Schneider made 19 saves, and this was on the same night that the Devils retired former goaltender Martin Brodeur's number 30 in a pregame ceremony at the Prudential Center. Reed Boucher and Adam Henrique each had a goal and an assist for the Devils, who ended a three-game losing streak. And now the Devils are 4-0-0 on nights when they retire jerseys.
Who figures that out?
I don't know, but you know, maybe they should retire a jersey every night. The Devils retired numbers of Scott Stevens, number 4, on February 3rd, 2006. Ken Danico on March 24th, 2006. He was wearing number 3. And Scott Niedermayer, number 27, on December 16th, 2011.
And just quick here, a rushed press release from the New Jersey Devils that apparently next game is Jay Pandolfo night. So they're looking to get on it quick and try to keep. I know. He was better in the playoffs always. He scores many goals. San Jose Sharks 2-0 win over the Chicago Blackhawks. Martin Jones made 33 saves for his fifth shutout of the season. Patrick Marleau scored a power play goal. Joe Thornton scored into an empty net with 1:42 remaining for the Sharks, who are now 18-8-2 on the road. Corey Crawford made 25 saves for Chicago, which had a three-game win streak end. It's first home game since January 24th.
Vancouver Canucks visited Colorado. They ended up winning 3-1. Jakob Markstrom made 29 saves. Center Bo Horvat had a goal and an assist, and the Vancouver Canucks ended a four-game losing streak. Markstrom, who started for the first time since January 21st, has won 4 consecutive starts and is 5-0-1 in his past 6 games.
And back to where we started, the Montreal Canadiens. Yes, 3 in a row. Ben Scrivens actually has won 3 games in a row for Montreal. They beat the Tampa Bay Lightning 4-2. This is a team that has had the Canadiens' number for a couple of years. I mean, dominated the Canadiens. But the Canadiens win 4-2. They've won now 3 games in a row. Brendan Gallagher had a goal and an assist. Thomas Pokanich had a goal and 2 assists. As we mentioned, Ben Scriven made 37 saves, win his 3rd straight start. PK Subban has a career-high game of 7 games with an assist.
And in Boston, the return of Milan Lucic. We talked about this earlier, coming back to Boston, and he is the consummate Boston Bruin. Anything you think of a Bruin, you think of Milan Lucic. So he comes back with the Los Angeles Kings tonight. They ended up winning 9-2 in Boston. Lucic had a goal and an assist on his return to the TD Garden. And obviously, Lucic was traded to the Kings last June after 8 seasons with the Bruins. He was given a standing ovation and a video tribute shown on the scoreboard during the second time out of the first period. Is Dion Phaneuf going to get that when he comes back?
I wonder what he'll get. That'll be interesting.
9 players, Jeff Carter, Marian Gaborik, Andy Androff, Drew Doughty, Dwight King, Trevor Lewis, Luke Shen, Dustin Brown, all scored for the Kings, who are 32-17-13. Goaltender Jonathan Quick made 35 goals. That's called depth in scoring for Los Angeles Kings tonight.
Absolutely. And one last one. This is where our buddy Chris Johnson was watching. Two teams, the Leafs, are trying to emulate a 7-4 win for the Florida Panthers over the Buffalo Sabres. Riley Smith, UC Jokinen each had 3 points to lead the Panthers. Smith had 2 goals and an assist. Jokinen a goal and 2 assists. Jaromir Jagr, goal number 739. He's two behind now Brett Hull for number 3 on the all-time NHL list. Alex Petrovic had a Gordie Howe hat-trick with a goal, assist, and 3 fights against Sabres forward Evander Kane. And we were chatting with Chris about it. He kind of says that Petrovic probably won half a fight. Kane won 2.5. Yeah. So got at it. A lot of frustration right now. The Buffalo Sabres starting to slip a little bit, and the season getting a little bit long for them. It's the first time since January 10th, 2002, that 2 players fought each other 3 times in 1 game, and that was Jody Shelley and Bob Probert.
Did you see the quote that Jagr put out on Twitter today about retiring on top? Because we're talking about Peyton Manning. Did you see what he said?
No, what did he say?
Well, he ended up tweeting out. He goes, "I don't understand why everyone says that you need when you win, you want to leave on top." He goes, "If I leave on top and I win a championship, I want to come back the next year."
Yeah.
He goes, "Why would you leave when you've ended at your best?" He goes, "When you're 35 years old, you want to die." Like he goes, "I got a different way of thinking." He says, "But if I'm winning a Stanley Cup championship, I want to come back the next year because I know I can still do it." So he's got a different mindset when it comes to that. And obviously, it's working out for him because he's continuing to play in the National Hockey League, and he's about to pass Brett Hull in the third all-time score in the NHL.
Well, he's, you know, but you look at Mark Burley with the Toronto Blue Jays, which was great. He just, you know, he didn't really diminish much. Certainly Jagr's in that case. Then you got Brett Favre. Holy mackerel. They kept saying, will they ever leave? Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why you look at Denver winning the Super Bowl and John Elway retired on top. He still had a couple more years left in him after the Broncos won that Super Bowl way back when.
We had to get the NFL in because you said we were going to talk about
it. Well, I said NBA, talk a little NBA.
Oh, NBA, that's right.
The Raptors are hot. All-star, NBA All-Star weekend, so it'll be a fun weekend here in Toronto that way. So that's one reason the Leafs will stay on the road.
You're going to be down there, right? You're going to go down and hang out with Drake a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit.
After hours parties with
shoot
him?
Shoot some trays, you know, drink some trays, do a little bit of all that. Emil, you coming?
We're gonna love to see you do that.
You're going to wear your Christmas sweater, the red one? I liked it. Yeah. Yeah. And anyway, yeah, right, Matt. Anyway, we're going to hear a little bit getting back to hockey as Matt Brown keeps us on course with his incredible abilities. Let's hear from a couple of principals involved in tonight's game. Let me look at Jake Gardner's stats, what he did. You know, he got the big goal that cut the margin to 4-3. Jake Gardner got the goal, plus one, two shots on goal, 25 minutes, 40 seconds of ice time. So he had the most ice time of anybody. Even more than Morgan Riley, did he? Yeah,
he did. Riley was under 20 minutes tonight.
Anyway, here it was. Maybe a new role for Jake Gardner. He talks about things after the game.
Another difficult deficit here. The effort certainly was there, but when you're, I guess you're back that far, it's hard to get back into it.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, the first period, we kind of beat ourselves in a way. The breakaway was tough, preventable, I mean, and also obviously the penalty and the second goal, so... any time you start like that, it's always tough to get back.
Jake, can you put into context and into words what this day has been like, the emotions in the morning with Dion's trade and then getting up for this game, falling behind, coming back?
Yeah, I mean, when I first saw it, the way I found out was on my phone, I think, like most people. And it was pretty emotional for a lot of guys. I mean, one of our really good friends and obviously our leader on our team. So it started that way. And... obviously, it was tough all day long, and just tried to refocus for the game. And I thought we competed well, but just didn't start the way we wanted to.
Going forward, that's 22 minutes a night. That's tough to make up, right? He's a good defenseman. Tonight was the first night. What was it like? How was the extra ice time spread around? How'd you find it?
Yeah, I mean, other guys are gonna have to step up. He was one of our top guys. So some of our younger guys are definitely gonna have to step up.
Were you able to get in touch with him at all and communicate at all and just send your best to him?
Yeah, I talked to him a little bit this morning. Just said, good luck in Ottawa, and we're going to miss him. So, yeah.
Others are going to have to step up. What did you see on your shot as you flew in off the wing and beat Hiller to the far side?
Yeah, I just tried to get it on net, and was lucky enough to get in there.
Jake Gardner of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and talking about guys, Todd Olusko, that need a little bit more time. Frankie Corrado, the favorite of our guy Matt Brown here. So he's gonna play the rest of the way, I would think, especially if Roman Polak gets traded before the deadline.
16-21 tonight. That's the most he's played all year, so that was pretty impressive.
Two assists. He had three shots on net. As Todd said, he played 16 minutes, 21 seconds. I think this is the first time, maybe the second time, we've heard from him after a game. It looks like he'll be a regular for the rest of the way. Is he part of the future? Frankie Corrado.
Yeah, it felt good to get in the mix a little more. Obviously losing Dion, that's a big part of our back end. So I think it's up to all of us as a group to fill the void. And, guys just have to step up, play hard every night and do the things that he did, so well every day, in practice, in the dressing room, and obviously out there in games.
Nice check on Joe Colburn. Is this all a matter of timing and getting the opportunity to play consistently to deliver a hit like that?
Yeah, I think it just comes with confidence. The more you play, the more you get in a groove, in a rhythm, and things like that just kind of seem to happen. And so, it's just one of those things where you keep the ball rolling and you kind of ride the wave.
You want the win, I guess, but a couple of points, especially with Dion's first game away, is good for you to keep your profile?
I mean, we want the wins. That's what we want. I mean, as a group, we feel a lot better after games when we win. And, we talked about that today, the guys in here, like, we're gonna work hard every day and compete and be as competitive as we can. And, that's the goal for our group right now.
Well, he's saying all the right things.
You know,
everybody likes playing, though, too.
Sure they do. I liked Frankie's the game today. And you know what? He makes a good point. He got to play a little bit more, and all of a sudden your confidence grows. That if you make a mistake, Babcock's going to put him back out. So I think tonight he was showing that, what he can do. And if he wasn't afraid to make mistakes tonight. And he was, he was criticized by Babcock saying he's not heavy enough and he's not strong enough. I think he's trying to show Mike Babcock, listen, I can do it. I think you're underestimating what I can do physically. So I thought he had a really good game, and it was a nice showing for him tonight. A
lot of feistiness from Nazem Kadri as well. and he came up. He was a minus one tonight for the Maple Leafs, but got over 17 minutes, 3 seconds of ice time. Five shots on goal, which was the most of the Maple Leafs, who did outshoot Calgary 36-22. Pretty wide margin that way. Yeah. Here he is post-game, Nazem Kadri.
Nazem, on the hit with Giordano, what did you see? What did you see in that play?
Not really anything, to be honest. I mean, I kind of had my head down for a second, but I was aware he was there and just tried to kind of get a shot on net. And I mean, I felt the hit pretty much. That's about it.
It was an emotional response from you. Did you and Giordano have words on the ice? What happened there?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it. Obviously, you know, emotionally, I was pretty frustrated after that hit. And I mean, I'm not sure if it was a clean hit or not, but I've been told it was. And I mean, it certainly didn't feel like that at the time, but I felt like I got that right in the head. But like I said, I mean, I was just kind of furious after the hit, and that's about it.
Do you regret the throat slash gesture there?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's not something that I even remember really doing, to be honest. I mean, I was kind of in and out a little bit after that hit, just furious. Like I said, it was an emotional reaction, and that's about it.
Are you aware of the extra attention you're going to get moving forward with Tyler, JVR, and a few of the other top guns there?
Of course. I mean, that's something that's going to happen, but it's always important that you just keep playing hard. I felt like we did that. Obviously, you know, a couple tough bounces to start. I actually felt like we played pretty well in the first period, and towards the end of the game, I felt like we dominated, but unfortunately couldn't get the win.
When was the last time you were that mad on the ice?
Probably never. Yeah, it was definitely something that I wasn't too happy about, and you know, obviously it's going to get reviewed and whatnot, but like I said, it was just an emotional reaction, and obviously I was pretty frustrated at the time, and certainly didn't feel like a good hit, and it didn't feel very good at the same time. So I mean, like I said, it is what it is, and obviously like I said, it was an emotional reaction.
Well, Nazem Kadri, they're talking about the throat slash gesture to Mark Giordano.
Yeah, you just can't do that. I mean, I've been in that situation where you get so angry, and I do understand where he's coming from, saying his emotions got the best of him. But you've really got to control it, especially nowadays. You could get away with it way back when there wasn't 9,000 cameras on you with HD clarity and stuff. And anything that you do is going to get picked up. And he has to be really careful. And I'm sure he is very apologetic for what he did. But it's going to get reviewed, and we're going to see what the league's going to do about it.
Let's hear a little bit from James Reimer. 22 shots. He stopped. Geez, not a lot of them. 18. There he is, James Reimer. Not one of his best efforts.
Came at him, and you know, lucky bounce here, and we'd still be in OT.
A weird day, obviously, with the trade in the morning. What was it like? How do you sum it up, the emotions of the morning and having to play tonight?
Oh, yeah, I mean, it was obviously tough in the morning. Surprised, you're shocked. Like a bunch of guys said, I think you didn't really see it coming, but you know, that's kind of the business. It was too bad to see him go. He's a great guy.
Imagine that. He's one of the most senior Toronto Maple Leafs now, James Reimer, with Dion Phaneuf gone. We're going to be back Thursday, Todd. How about it? 8:30 pregame show. We got the whole game. Leafs move on to Edmonton and Connor McDavid.
It's
going
to be fun to watch him.
Excitement. Wonder if the Ottawa players should have landed, and see what gives.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch tomorrow night to see Dion Phaneuf in an Ottawa.
Absolutely, yeah.
Center's outfit as well. But yeah, Thursday night against the Oilers. Listen, great players on that team in Edmonton. Kind of seeing what Toronto wants to kind of, they want to follow them a little bit with the high draft picks. I think they would like to do a little bit better than what Edmonton has done with those draft picks.
4-3 win for the Calgary Flames over the Toronto Maple Leafs. You've been listening to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelic, Todd Alushko on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.